Okay, good morning, everyone. So nice to be back. Welcome back. Once again, apologies for the last 2 weeks. Not in my control. Well, nothing is in our control, but... So that's okay. But 2 weeks ago was Tisha B'Av. As I explained, last week we had a rabbi's retreat, which was really beautiful. I'm going to mention it in the course of today's discussion a little bit. But it was really... a nice recharge. So, welcome to a new series. This series goes for 5 weeks, leading us to close to Rosh Hashanah. The series is called Soul Work, Reclaiming Your Inner Self, Removing Pain, Guilt, and Toxicity by Going Deeper Within. None of that makes sense. Don't worry. It will, hopefully, as we move through. So, I'm excited about the series because we are... on one hand, revisiting some important ideas which we've done in the past, but and it's important, especially around this time of the year, as I'll explain. But what I want to do with this series is to share some different ideas, to expand on the themes, give a bit of some new angle, and so on and so forth. So the reason that we picked this series now is that, as I mentioned, we are getting closer to Rosh Hashanah. In fact, this Shabbat, which is called Shabbat Mevorchim, is the Shabbat which gives blessing to the new month, which begins towards the end of next week. I'm referring to the new month of Elul. So we know that the month of Elul is that special month which prepares us for the journey of Tishrei, of the month of the Chagim. When I say the month of the Chagim, I'm not only talking about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I'm talking about Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, which is all in 1 month, and excuse me, and especially according to Kabbalistic teachings and other teachings, Jewish teachings, it's really all part of one journey, one formula, which is very important to understand. It'll come through in what we're going to talk about as well, but it's really one idea. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and then Sukkot is part of one spiritual experience. But the spiritual experience cannot take place unless we have a proper preparation for it, which is the month of Elul. Which begins next week. Now we know that our sources tell us that the month of Elul is a special month, a month of tshuva, which normally is translated as repentance. Repentance normally means fixing something, asking forgiveness, apologizing, resolving to be better, going forward, growing, and so on. Which is all important, all that is critically important and certainly part of tshuva, but tshuva is much more than that, as we'll soon explain, as we have explained in the past as well. So it's to improve, to become different, to really grow. And what God does, we are taught, he gives us a special month to get ourselves ready for the new year, and he makes it easier to do tshuva. He makes it easier to reconnect and repair, because there's a special closeness, we are taught, between him and us during that month of Elul, which again starts next week. The analogy that is the famous analogy that's always given is the idea of Melech Basadeh, the king in the field. The king in the field is a famous analogy in early sources where we are taught that, a lot of analogies are given in Hasidic philosophy, particularly using a king. A king is normally very inaccessible, very hard to get to, and so on. But once a year, the analogy goes that he comes into the field, he mixes among the common folk, he is very, very accessible, and anyone that wants to go to him and speak can do that. He just comes very simply without his whole retinue, and the king is there and is accessible. So that's to a symbol of the month of Elul, that God in that month is very, very accessible, he's very available. So take the analogy just a little bit deeper, and that's why it's so important to do a series like this, is there's a problem with his accessibility. Just going back to the analogy of the king. Not a problem, but there's something to be aware of, right? So when a king's in his glorious palace on his throne with his guards, with his retinue and so on, he's very inaccessible, but if you get into him, he's extremely noticeable. Like, you can't miss him, right? No one can miss the king and the king's presence when he's in his majestic environment. When the king comes into the field, he makes himself so accessible that you can actually miss him. Like, just looks like one of the boys, one of the guys, one of the group. So therefore, it's almost like so available that you can actually miss it. And that's true in lots of things in life. When things are unbelievably accessible, on one hand, it's so great, but on the other hand, you can miss it. So that's why the month of Elul, we are taught, we have to make a move, we have to let him in. He's knocking at our door. He's saying, I'm here, talk to me. And that's why we need to make sure, we need to reflect on what that month means and what the whole process means, what the whole experience means, so that we can actually take advantage of his accessibility. Now, when we talk about this idea of tshuva, of reconnecting, what does it mean, right? So we talk about we all fail. That's where human being is designed. God designed us that way, to fail on all levels. We might fail in our relationships, we might fail in our emotional responses, we might fail in our godly values, we might fail in our spirituality. Whatever we fail in different areas, and that's okay. We make mistakes, that's part of who we are. It just makes us normal, not evil. But because of that, because we are designed to fail, God gives us this process called tshuva, to, especially once a year, to reconnect, to ask forgiveness, to apologize, to reflect, and to fix and to grow, right? So that's a beautiful gift. It's called the gift of tshuva, on the one hand. On the other hand, the question we need to ask ourselves is, why is it so hard? Like, it's very easy to talk to. It makes for a great topic for shiurim around this time of the year, particularly. It makes my life easier. But why is it so hard? In other words, why is it so hard to implement? Why is it so hard to change? Why is it so hard to reconnect, to repair, to return? And when we do it, why is it so hard to sustain it? Why is it hard to hang on to it? People always complain that, you know, they get inspired around this time of the year. They might even take a resolution. They might even take upon themselves a new mitzvah. They might improve their relationship. They might do lots of different things, and then it lasts a little bit of time, and then boom, we're back to business, as we say, right? Why is it hard? Why? Anyone have suggestions? Yep. Okay, well, we're also designed to grow, right? True, I mean, here we are.
Growth is hard.
Yeah, growth is hard. Correct. Growth is hard, and God, that's the simple answer. Growth is hard, and it's also made that way, it's designed that way, because for it to be real, it needs to be hard. Because then it's real. When we deserve it, the Talmud says this interesting phrase, that a person would prefer a coin of 100 gold coins or whatever, than 9 times as much. He'll prefer the one that he earned rather than 9 that are given to him, right? I'm not sure in the world today that's quite society's culture, but that's what's supposed to be. Why? Because what you earn is real. What you're given is a gift, okay? It's the same thing with serving God or being a good person or you know, living a life of value. Same thing. What we work for, what we achieve is real. So it's true. But on the other hand, it's also hard for the following reason. But before I tell you why it's hard and go into the rest of the year, I'm going to do something else. Yes?
Is it hard because the old habits is so deeply
ingrained? Yep, so habits become very ingrained. Even though we're not really defined by our habits. That's the truth. And we're going to talk about that. But maybe that's the mistake we make. We think we're defined by it, but we're not really. Yes, we have personalities, and part of that personality is certainly has weak spots to it. There's no, you know, without a question. So that's all true. But I'm going to share with you another idea. But before I do that, I don't normally do this, but I'm going to break for a commercial. Only because, okay.
What is it?
Yeah, this sheer response by, no, it's not. But the commercial is, it's hanging up on the door. You have it on your table. You've got it in WhatsApps and in emails already. But I'm going to just emphasize it again. So in 2 weeks from tonight, Thursday, 24th of August, we are having a very beautiful event called The Journey. So it's on your table. Please read it. It's going to be a beautiful event, a combination of having a few beautiful nibbles together and saying L'chaim together and socializing together, and then experiencing a journey. A journey which will be together with music, beautiful music, great musicians. It's on the flyer. Insights, meditation, in a very beautiful setting. It's the Bondi Surf Club. It has a charge. It has a couple charge as well at a discount. It doesn't mean it has to be a husband or wife. It can just be two people who come together. It's going to be a really inspiring, uplifting, beautiful event. And I urge you all to come. It will relate a little bit to the things we're going to... So if you listen to the... Yes. Yes, I was about to say that. You can book either on your phone today, as before you leave, or in the office. We're both saying that because a number of people keep on telling us they're coming, but they haven't booked. And we kind of need to know for catering purposes. So, I mean, if you happen not to book and you wake up the day before, come. But you can do it at the door. But please book soon. It is going to be a beautiful event, so come along. End of commercial. Okay. Don't book now because you've got to listen. But as soon as I'm finished... So a number of things we have to explore. The first thing is, part of the reason why it's so hard, not to discount the other reasons, they're all true, but part of the reason why it's so hard is because we need to understand the meaning of tshuva. Tshuva is not repentance, not only repentance. Tshuva is a return, a reconnection, a return. In fact, the word in Hebrew, we've said this before, the word in Hebrew tshuva means lashuv, to return, right? That's what the word tshuva actually means. It doesn't mean repentance. It means... Sorry?
It's an answer. Tshuva.
It could be an answer, but it also means lashuv, to return. An answer also is return. I know Hebrew works like that. Many words can be translated in two different ways. An answer is also return. If you ask me a question, I return to you with an answer. That's why tshuva is called return, right? So it's a return. What are we returning to?
God.
We're returning to God. But actually it also means, this is an important part, we're returning to our inner self. Now, you've heard me talk about self before, so let me qualify what I'm talking about. I don't mean self the way it's talked about in modern society. That return to self is egocentricity. I mean the real self, our soul, right? Our inner self, our true self, which we'll talk about a lot, right? You heard me say there's a conscious self and a real self, right? So I'm talking about the inner. Now, why are those two things connected? Because the soul that we have, the inner soul that we have, as we know, as it's explained in the famous book of Tanya and other places, is an infusion of godliness. Now, the soul itself has many layers, but at the very core of the soul, there's a godly spark, which is our purity, it's our essence, it's who we really are. Not always who we feel we are, because we don't always feel consciously godly, but it's who we really are, it's our true definition. And therefore, the process of tshuva, we're going to have to understand this and develop it, why it is so, but the process of tshuva is actually returning to our real self, returning to God and returning to our real self, which actually is connected, because our real self is a godly force. Is that clear? So therefore, there are a lot of aspects of tshuva which are necessary to understand, besides the practical tools, which we'll go through also. But it's not just a practical exercise. It's a whole mindset change. And it's a whole different way of thinking, which we need to go through. So, what I'm going to do is very, very quickly talk about the things we're going to run through, not just today, over the next few weeks, because I want to just give you an idea of what I mean about the different things that need to fall into place to do a proper tshuva, and then we'll understand why God gave us a whole month, right? Because often what people think is tshuva is, oh, okay, I think, you know, it wasn't so nice what I do, or I should do more in this area, or I should, you know, not get angry so often, or I should... put a mezuzah on my door, whatever the case is, and it's just that, okay, I'm going to change, I'm going to do, and I'll go out and do it. That's not real tshuva. It's got to come from a deep place from within. That's good, and it's great, and if a person can do that, it's fantastic, but it's not really sustainable. It's got to come from a deeper place, right? So what I mean with that is, first of all, we're going to have to understand the layers of the human existence. That's really important, and what lives in each layer. We have to learn to become aware, and also the importance of presence, being in the moment. We have to understand and build into our psyche in a conscious, very, very deep way the focus and the necessity and the importance of growth and renewal and a freshness each day, right? That's a very, very important part. One of the things we're going to have to look at also is the inner fragmentation that we have. Right? That's why I call it soul work, because you have to understand that actually a lot goes on within ourselves. Not only a lot goes on within ourselves, but a lot of the different parts of who we are clash with each other. And part of the tshuva process is learning to align the different parts of who we are to create oneness and create calmness. That's something we'll talk about a lot as well. We're going to have to learn how to let go of guilt, toxicity, let go of stuff, one of the most difficult things to do. We'll have to learn how to access that deep soul, that infinity of our soul. And then, of course, we're going to talk about practical tools of change, practical tools of tshuva. Okay, now you know why it's 5 weeks. Some of the ideas I'm going to share with you, particularly today, and probably going forward as well, is comes from a book called The Path of Tshuva it's called The Path of Tshuva, Reclaiming the Self, by Rabbi Dov Ber Pinson. He lives in New York, he writes some nice books, okay. So the first thing we need to do, and this is a really important part of anything, any part of living, but an important part of the Tshuva process, is revisiting the concept of living in the now, living in the present. Okay? Which is a very difficult thing to do today. People find that very difficult, particularly today. And let's understand that concept of living in the present and also how that's connected to this process of reconnecting and returning. There was a Hasidic Rebbe lived a couple hundred years ago. His name was Reb Moshe of Kubrin. When he passed away, a colleague of his, sort of from another town, the famous Kotzker Rebbe, came and he approached this Rebbe of Kubrin's disciples and he said, eulogize him for me. Tell me about some of his unique, amazing traits. So they answered the following. They said, actually, the truth is, it's a difficult thing to do because there was no particular area of life that he excelled in. Now, he was a Hasidic Rebbe. He was knowledgeable. He was pious. He was this. He was that. But I can't sort of talk about one particular thing that he was unbelievable in. He was just generally a tzaddik. However, they said he was unique in this following. He was unique in that whatever he was doing at that moment, he was completely present. Whatever occupied him at any given moment was all that was relevant to him. That was his uniqueness. Right? And it is unique. It's a unique thing. Because it's hard to do. We'll see why in a second. So, it is interesting, and that is such an important thing, and yet, we're always distracted, and it's such a hard thing to be present. Right? One of the ideas behind it is, and this comes from Rabbi Pinson's book, and I'm going to read it to you because he says it very beautifully. He says, the present often feels less thrilling or relevant than the past or the future. Right? While daydreaming or reminiscing, we miss what is happening right in front of us. While life seems unsatisfying in the present, we may attempt to gain comfort by idealizing life in the past. Our minds restlessly roam through the maze of memory, searching for a richer, more promising reality. Those were the days, is the universal cry of the disempowered spirits. I thought that was very beautiful. Right? In other words, it's like a nostalgia, which is nice sometimes, but often what nostalgia does to us, it demonstrates an unwillingness to deal with what we have right now, what is in the present, what is in front of us right now. You see, because what happens is, which by the way, the same is with the future, right? And he says sometimes We also resort to idolizing the potential future because we are so busy ruminating over the past or planning our main manipulation of the future that we are absent from the here and the now. And part of the reason for that is because the now is often boring, apart from the times that it isn't. But right? No, but I mean, the non-boring moments are not that many, right? How many of us can look back at the end of the day and say, wow, every single minute of the day was just like thrilling, right? It was amazing. Now, of course, memories of amazing events are good. Dreaming of great future. Now, and the same thing goes, by the way, with distressing moments. Not every day the moment is distressing, but that occupies our mind. So we'll, or the future, things that we worry about, right? Things that hurt us or might hurt us. Those are things that occupy our mind. The present is like, you know, getting into the car, going, etc., right? The problem is that obviously the problem is that means you're not present, and not present leads to an unfulfilled life, really. But, and a fragmentation of the mind, and distraction, and stress, and so on and so forth. So we know the power of mindful living. We've talked about that very, very much. But just let's revisit this concept from a Jewish point of view, right? See, this idea of living in the great moments of the past or worrying about or living about or dreaming about the potential great moments of the future and not focusing on the less exciting present is extremely anti-Jewish. Why? Because we've talked about this before, but one of the foundational ideas of Judaism is that we connect to a higher purpose every single moment of the day. Right? That is the idea of a mitzvah. Now, not every day, not every moment of the day is a mitzvah, like we have our mitzvah that we're supposed to do. But actually, we know that mitzvahs are just models and things that we're supposed to do each day. But actually, the concept of the mitzvah extends to the rest of the day. Every single moment is supposed to be a mitzvah. Whatever that mitzvah is, it might be even resting. That's also a mitzvah. But every single day, mindful living from a Jewish point of view means to focus on every moment of the day and what is the purpose of that moment. Now we know also that the, what is the translation of the word mitzvah? Good deeds, that's one, or commandments, right? That's what people always translate them as. Good deeds or commandments. But there's another translation that is brought in Hasidic philosophy very much, and that is that the word mitzvah comes from the Aramaic word tzavta, which means to be connected, right? To connect to God, to connect to something higher. And every single moment of the day, we have that opportunity. Every experience that we have gives us, by the way, we'll come back and explain what this has got to do with Shabbat, but let's just talk about it for a moment. So every moment of the day gives us that potential to live with purpose. Which means every single day is an opportunity to do a mitzvah. Every experience can be a mitzvah. Every experience can be turned into a mitzvah, put it that way. That's why, for example, eating, which is not, doesn't sound like a great mitzvah, it's not a spiritual thing, but it can be. If we eat mindfully, spiritually mindfully, if we make a blessing, if we eat the right things, what Hashem wants us to eat, if we eat for the right purpose, to grow and to be healthy, to be able to serve Him better, right, and so on, as Kabbalah explains. What does that mean? That means that when we ruminate on the past, we think of the past, we daydream about the future, and we're not in the present, we're missing out on the mitzvah. We're missing out on life's purpose for now. Does that make sense? In other words, we're missing on what we could achieve now. And in Judaism, the mitzvah that you can do now is the most important thing in the whole universe, in the entire universe. That's what you can do now. That's my purpose now. Now, part of that purpose is planning for the future. That's part of the now. But planning for the future doesn't mean getting stuck in the future. Planning for the future means using the now to make a stronger future. That's very different. Same thing with the past. Learning from the past is not being stuck in the past. Learning from the past is taking the past and making a better now. It's all about the now. Right? Again, I think we've explained this many times when we talk about mindfulness, that it's a little bit different to sort of what we call secular mindfulness, that now is the only thing that's important. It's not. The past is very important and the future is very important. We have an overall goal in Judaism. We have a life's mission which spans our entire life, for which we need goals, for which we need planning, for which we need learning from the past, repairing, and so on. But in terms of our focus, the now is what I can achieve. The now, the depth of the now, is the depth of the now mitzvah. There's an amazing thing. There was a response, a halachic response, in the 16th century. There was a very interesting question in the lands that were, you know, hostile lands. But there was a Jew that was trapped in prison for being Jewish or whatever it was, right? And eventually the prison authorities, and in prison he was unable to do lots of mitzvot. Couldn't put on tefillin, they took it away from him, he couldn't make kiddush on Shabbos, he couldn't, even fasting in kippur would be a problem. Or a lot of things were just a problem, right? So the prison authorities said that they would allow him one day of the year to go free. They're going to give him one day of the year break. Then he has to come back to prison. And his dilemma, being a devout Jew, was he didn't know which day to choose, right? It's an interesting dilemma, right? Should he choose Yom Kippur, maybe? That's like the most holy day. Maybe should he, like, he can go out today, but maybe tomorrow. But should he wait for Shabbat so that he can make Kiddush, he can keep Shabbat properly? So it actually became a very interesting, complicated problem, a moral problem, a halachic moral problem of, is one mitzvah more important than the other? Because we know there is a hierarchy of mitzvot on some level, halachically. Now's not time to go into it, but it does exist, such a thing, right? All mitzvot are important, but some mitzvot have a greater severity than others, so to speak, right? So he sent letters to great rabbis, great halachic authorities, to ask what he should do. So one of them came from a rabbi called the Radvaz. He was a great halachic authority at the time. He wrote him a letter and said, take the first day that's available. You have an opportunity to do a mitzvah, do it. I, planning ahead, that means that I won't be able to hear Shofar Rosh Hashanah. But what you can do now, you do. It's broad. I see there's a lot of relevant halachic issues today that are built on this discussion. Now, I'll just point out, just for the sake of honesty, that there were other opinions also. But that's not, and for all sorts of reasons. But the Radvaz's approach brings out this point. It was driven by this idea. Every day we have an opportunity to do something. Every day we have an opportunity to achieve purpose, to achieve a greater goal in life. What you can do today is most important. So he said, take the first day. Right? Now, let's go back to the tshuva discussion. In the context of tshuva, there are three reasons, putting it all together, there are three reasons why awareness and consciousness and living mindfully is so important in relation to the concept of tshuva. And I'm going to cover two today and probably the next one do next week or over the next 2 weeks because that's much more deeper. So on a simple level, it's like this. Why conscious living and mindful living is so important? Because one of the ideas of tshuva, which we have spoken about in the past, is the idea of cheshbon. To do tshuva, you have to be aware of your strengths and weaknesses. You have to have awareness. You have to live with awareness, right? Elul, the month of Elul, which we start next week, is often referred to in the sources as Chodesh HaCheshbon, the month of stock-taking. Now, when a person lives in a way that's very non-mindfully, in other words, we live distracted, we live in a very fragmented way, I don't know about you, but it's hard to remember what I did yesterday afternoon. You know, forget about what I did in the whole year, right? Or I might not even be aware of what I did. I might not, we just swim and travel through the treadmill of life without being very aware. If we do that, it's actually very hard to actually take stock properly. It's very hard to be aware, do I actually live my values? I'm not even sure what my values are. I just respond to every crisis of every single day, right? Because non-mindful living often results in that type, in the extreme, often results in that type of living. It's a very responsive living. I just respond to the next problem, right? Whereas if I live mindfully, I actually think about things and I am aware of what I'm doing and I have a certain presence which helps me later be able to understand the process of reconnecting because I need to know where I am, right? You can't know what to improve unless you know who you are and what you've been doing and what you've been accomplishing. Which, by the way, doesn't only mean what I've messed up in, but not only to know your failures. You have to be aware of you, your personality. You have to know where you're up to. Not to define yourself by it, because you can grow and you can improve. But when I look back at the year, one of the things that the sources tell us that when you do a cheshbon, and this is very important about the cheshbon of the month of Elul, is that you need to take stock and really think about your failures, your deficiencies, and your successes. And your successes. Why? Because the successes come from your strengths. And a person, an honest person and a productive person, needs awareness, first of all, and awareness comes from being present, and awareness comes from consciousness and being and living mindfully. And being aware and being present means not only to know my weaknesses, but to know my strengths as well. Because we need our strengths to know how to fix our deficiencies, right? That's how personality works. When you have a deficiency in anything, spiritual, relationship-wise, psychologically, emotionally, whatever the case is, knowing your strengths means knowing your parts of you that you can use to support, to back up, to give strength to those deficiencies and to help repair them and fix them. Lack of being in the present creates blurriness. Does life seems like a blur sometimes? Right? I guess not. Only me, right? So I guess everyone else is very mindful, right? That's what happens. When we live mindlessly, we run from one thing to another. Days become a blur. Weeks become a blur. Months become a blur. And it's very hard then to take stock. On the other hand, awareness and starting to notice things, right, means we notice things around us. We notice what we've done. We remember what we've done. We remember conversations. We remember things that have happened. But also, more importantly, remember, we notice and we are aware of ourselves, of our inner selves, our personality. We become honest about it, and we start to notice when we take things seriously, we don't take things seriously, when we're selfish, when we're not selfish, we kind of notice what is going on within us, which is a critical step to trying to change, right? You can already see, so it's a process, this whole thing. It's not just, I wake up one morning, I have a couple of things I need to fix, I'm going to fix them. It doesn't work like that. That's why it doesn't stay. Right? It's a process, and that process is part of Cheshbon. We need to be aware of ourselves. Awareness is real important, and awareness comes from presence. That's first of all. The second reason why being present is so important is because growing, improving, fixing means we have to let go. And the only way to let go is to be present. Now, as I said before, what does it mean to let go? This is very important. Not to forget the past, but to learn from the past. So we always have to be aware of what's happened in the past. Take responsibility for what's happened in the past. Learn from it, grow from the past. But not to be stuck in the past. Right? We cannot be defined by the past. Or our future. So we can't have the past define what is happening now. And that is the number one thing that stands in the way of proper growth. Most of us live in a way where we are so affected by the past and the future that it almost informs and defines and creates the present. Now, to let go of that, not to be stuck in the past, not to be stuck in the future, means we actually have to be really present. Right? You know, it's an interesting thing that the Abarbanel, who was, I think, a 16th century sage in Spain. In fact, he was one of the people that were expelled from Spain. He was an interesting leader. He was a leader of the Jewish people at the time in Spain. And he was actually very, very close to the royal family at the time. And they actually gave him an exemption. They said, you don't have to leave Spain. And he said, my people leave, I leave. And he left with everyone. And he was a great sage. He says the following. He responds to a question that goes like this. He says, why is it that we don't focus a lot on the afterlife? Now, Judaism believes in the afterlife. It's part of the concept of Gan Eden. Our soul goes somewhere. Sometimes our soul needs cleansing. Sometimes we're able to go into Gan Eden. Sometimes it needs cleansing first, and then we can go into paradise. All these things are all true, but we don't find that to be the focus of conversation. Right? It's interesting. It is true. It's something we believe in. In fact, it's even part of the 13 principles of faith. But it's not something that's talked about a lot, right? And he says the reason is, and also the Torah itself doesn't go into detail at all about, you know, the rewards of what's going to happen in Olam Haba and so on and so forth. Why not? It exists and it tells us it's there, but it doesn't tell us why. He says because today is what is important, even in a good sense. It's nice to know that, yes, of course, well, I do have consequences, and if I do the right thing, I'll have good consequences. All that is true and nice, but that's not our focus. Our focus is the gift of being able to connect today. That's the gift, right? Shuvah, he explains, therefore, and this comes also from another big author, one early author on Shuvah, and he says, who was called Rabbeinu Yonah, he wrote a whole book on Shuvah. And he said, the foundation of tshuva is considering today as the day you were born, the first day of your life. Which means you have no merits or demerits. It's completely clean slate. How many of us wake up like that in the morning? Right? How long does it take after you wake up to remember all the tzaras of yesterday and to worry about all the things of tomorrow, right? We often do that. We wake up in the morning and we kill the day before we start it. Why? Because we're stuck in yesterday and stuck in tomorrow. But you woke up today, not yesterday and tomorrow. Right? This takes a lot of work. But it's foundational to tshuva. You know why? Because tshuva is about a fresh start. That's why it's the gift of tshuva. The whole message of tshuva is that we're not defined by yesterday. Because if you were defined by yesterday, you wouldn't be able to do tshuva. Right? How many times don't we do good things? A parent comes home, they had a real rotten day, someone insults them at work. Right? So what do? We come home and we rotten to our children. Let's say, right? So we just gave up another mitzvah. Being good to your children is a mitzvah. It's purpose, it's part of our mission of life. Right? I want to come home, I want to go to a shiur, I want to study some Torah. I can't go today, I'm just so upset about what happened today. So what do? We got stuck in this morning's episode, which meant that it destroyed a whole bunch of nows. Right? Even if what I did this morning was something that I did, something like I'm on from the office and I made such a mistake. I said something to someone I should never have said. Right? Now, do I have to take responsibility for that? Of course. Do I have to resolve it? Of course I do. That's part of responsible living. It's not a free-for-all. If I hurt someone, I need to make amends. I need to think about it. I need to process it. I need to go speak to the person. I need to apologize. Or whatever the case is. But not to ruminate on it. Ruminating is not productive. First of all, the other person doesn't feel any better. The fact that I'm thinking about it for 7 hours at home. Right? So it's that art of being, of letting go of what happened this morning. Not to throw it away. It will be dealt with at its time, at its appropriate time. And I need to take responsibility for that. And I will, hopefully. And when I do that, I will be a better person. That person will feel better if it had to do with someone else. And the issue will be resolved, hopefully. But ruminating it, being stuck or being defined by it now, is not going to help that process. Yeah.
Is there a positive attribute of rumination? Can it be for good? Ruminating?
Yes, but it has to be controlled. It's same like guilt. It goes together with guilt. There's positive guilt, which we've talked about before. It's when you control when you feel guilty. In Jewish tradition, there's a concept that every night before you go to sleep, there's a concept of the bedtime Shema. Right? That's supposed to be a time where you think about the day. You know, it's funny how things go. When we're supposed to think about things, that's when we don't think about them. Right? Who sits down before they go to sleep and spend 10 minutes? Let me think about the day. Let me feel great about the things I accomplished. Let me think upset about the person I hurt. And resolve to fix it tomorrow, right? No, we don't do that. When it comes time for bed, we're just so tired. So we watch some, we check another 17 WhatsApps and then we fall asleep. Right?
But Rabbi, you go too long. Sometimes it's too hard to...
Correct. No, it doesn't have to be long. It could be left. It could be dealt with the same day, but in a controlled way. Right?
But if you don't fix it like yesterday or tomorrow, you lose it for a month.
Correct. But fixing it today doesn't mean you ruminate on it. Fixing it today means, and we're going to talk about how you do this in next week, but fixing it today means I did something wrong, I need to fix it. Okay, can I fix it now? No, because I'm doing something else. Well, if you're doing something else, then put it on the shelf. Okay, but I need to fix it today. Okay, so make a time. If it's 3:45 this afternoon, that's when I'm going to come back to it. That's what being present means, that I don't, right?
And if it doesn't leave you, does that mean like maybe focus on it now? If you're having trouble separating from letting go.
Okay, so that's the question is, why is it? Why are you being defined by it now? That's the question. That's what we have to go to the... That'll be next week, okay? That's why it's so important. But I just want to make the point that doing... That's what he says. Tshuva means today's the new day. That's the greatness of tshuva. See, because God doesn't define us by yesterday, so why should we? He says, I want you to take responsibility for yesterday. He doesn't define us by yesterday. God says, if you wake up this morning and you have a mitzvah to do, whatever that mitzvah is, prayer, tefillin, Shabbos candles, taking care of your child, being something nice to your spouse, whatever that mitzvah is. If you have an opportunity to do a mitzvah now, do it. Be fully there, be fully present. Oh, you got some unfinished stuff from yesterday? You'll take care of that, but not now. The now cannot, that's right. Which is very interesting because there was another Hasidic rabbi called Rav Shalom Shachna of Probisht, right? And he said the following. He said there's a mistake that people make with tshuva. Now, interesting. Let me just go back to this time of the year for a second. There's so much to learn how it's structured. It's the most beautiful thing. These 2 months are the most amazing months. The month of Elul and then the Chagim itself, right? So, Elul is called the month of Cheshbon. You're supposed to actually take stock. That's the month, by the way, that we're supposed to feel bad about some of the things that we've done and feel good about some of the things that we've done good and so on. But it's interesting. It's interesting. The process of actually doing tshuva, apologizing to God and resolving to be better, that actually is not the month of Elul. When is that? Anyone know? Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. In fact, Yom Kippur is known as the day when we fulfill the mitzvah of tshuva. That's when we do confession, that's when we say, I did this wrong, and then I'm going to be better, and so on. So what's going on? Why are we separating? Why are we separating the two things, right? Shouldn't we just do it all in one? Let the month of Elul be the month of Cheshbon. Think about what you've done and then fix it. The answer is no, he said. He said that's a mistake people make. That when you think about what happened in the past, right away, what's your reaction? I've got to fix it. The answer is no, you don't have to fix it. In other words, you need to be aware of where you're up to. That's what Elul is for, to become aware. But there's a whole process to fix it. There's a Rosh Hashanah, there's Yom Kippur. You don't fix it. What it does have to bring is be more focused on the now. The first step to tshuva is what am I doing now that's better? Not how am I going to fix what happened yesterday. You follow? What can I do now? That's why Elul, in the sort, the month of Elul, in many Jewish sources, they talk about a month of upgrade. Just be more spiritual now, not fixing all the mistakes of the past. Part of that upgrade is to be aware, to take stock, to learn who you are, to teach yourself about yourself, not to fix it, but on the contrary, actually learn. Because if you fix it, but you still haven't mastered the art of being in the now, you won't fix it. You have to be now, you have to be present first. Is that clear? Now, truth is, part of what is, we talked about this the other day in Ashir, but part of what to do this actually is about letting go of our ego. And let me explain to you why. You see, the difference between ego and not ego, ego is about self. Letting go of ego is about something higher than ourselves. All right, let's define it that way in the context of this discussion. So this idea, let's say I really messed up yesterday, right? Let's say I really messed up yesterday and I'm feeling very guilty. Unhealthy guilt. Guilt that's not getting me anywhere. I'm just feeling guilty. So let's say I wake up this morning and I come to shul, right? And I'm supposed to pray. And I'm finding it very hard to focus. Why? By the way, prayer isn't supposed to be the time of great mindfulness. It's probably the hardest time to be present. But that's a separate discussion. How you achieve focus and presence in prayer. Okay, maybe we start with one line. It's also good. But I don't mean, you know, one line to be fully present. Prayer is a hard thing, but that's for another discussion. But so I wake up in the morning and I want to pray and I just can't focus today. Why can't I focus? Because yesterday I really upset someone and I'm feeling bad about it. Right? So it's about not being present. Right? So I think it's about self-degradation. So I think, you know, who am I to pray anyway? Like I'm such a bad guy. You know how we do it. That's how we get stuck in the past, right? Or I get stuck because I'm angry with someone. In other words, either I put myself down, like who am I anyway? I did such a not nice thing yesterday. Maybe I didn't intend to, but I did anyway, so I'm not such a great guy. Maybe God doesn't even want my prayers. Who am I to pray anyway, right? All these type of things that people do. I'm a hypocrite, I'm a phony, I'm a fake. Right? Or like, you know, it doesn't have to be prayer, it could be anything. There's a calling to do a favor for someone. Who am I? I'm not such a kind person. I'm going to do this, they're going to think I'm a kind person. I'm not, I'm a real cruel person. That's one way of thinking. Or the other way around, I'm angry with someone. Right? How could they say that to me? How could they do that to me yesterday? And I can't focus. If you think about it, both things, even the guilt, when I put myself down and I berate myself for being not a good person yesterday, which we all do at some stage, right? It's all about self at the end of the day. About self, about me. The focus in both cases is about me. I'm a bad person, I'm a good person. I'm not a good person, I am a good person. This guy is better than me, he's worse than me. Who does he think he is? It's all vis-a-vis me. Right? And that's why I'm so wrapped in me that at least in a subtle way, that I can't do what I'm supposed to do now. The old Hasidic tradition was, the old Hasidic Jews used to say, it's not about you, it's about what you need to do. It's about what connection you can have to a higher purpose today. It's about the connection you have to God today. So he said something to me. So I messed up yesterday. What am I supposed to do? I gave you the analogy. I come to shul. I'm supposed to pray. So pray. Pray with full presence. Someone's asked me for a favor and it's a good mitzvah to help them out. So help them. You're a good person. You're a bad person. Why are you thinking about so much about yourself? Now, of course you have to think about yourself in a healthy way. That's what the cheshbon is. Comes time where you got to sit down and take stock, and things are the areas you're supposed to improve on. Because of course we're supposed to strive to be better people. That's why we have tshuva. That's why we have a repair process, right? But that's not the beginnings of tshuva. The beginning of tshuva is freshness. The beginning of tshuva is I wake up in the morning. What does God want from me now? Whatever that mitzvah is. But how can I do it? Yesterday was so. You defined by yesterday, that's about you. You'll deal with later. What do you need to do now? What's your calling now? That's part of how we become presence. Learning to let go. Let go of the past, let go of tomorrow, on all levels. Right? You know the word for The word for transgression in Hebrew, do you know what that is?
Avera.
Avera, right. So we always translate the word Avera as a transgression, right? You know what Avera also means in Hebrew? Avar, past. Past. Avera means I get stuck in the past. That's an Avera. It's one thing to do the transgression, but then to get stuck in it and to find myself with it, that's even a bigger Avera. You know, there was a great, beautiful line. I'm jumping ahead of time now, but there was a beautiful line, a beautiful thing that I think the Kotzker Rebbe said. It's a famous question everyone asks. You know that at the end of Yom Kippur, right? You ever been in Shul, end of Yom Kippur, in the Ilah, the crescendo, we string out Shema Yisrael. It's like the climax, right? And then when we finish Ne'ilah, there's the regular weekday Arvit service, the evening service. And how does it start? What's the first line of the evening service? We ask God to atone for sin. So all the Hasidic masters ask the question, hold on a second, you just finished Yom Kippur. It's the holiest day. Slate wiped completely clean. God has forgiven everything. Atonement. You haven't even had time to sin. And you really ask you for forgiveness? Give it 10 minutes at least. Right? I mean, every day we ask God to forgive us, right? Because, you know, we all mess up a lot of times. That's fine. But at the end of Yom Kippur, come on, like a 10-minute break. I haven't insulted anyone yet. I haven't had any heretical thoughts yet. I'm pure, I'm clean. But at the end of Yom Kippur, boom, it's fantastic. What do you ask for forgiveness? He said, the Kotzker Rebbe, you know why? There's only one sin you have when Yom Kippur is finished. That you don't believe that you have a fresh start. You don't believe your tshuva was accepted. You don't believe that God wiped your slate clean completely and he's given you a completely new beginning. That's the avera we have. We don't believe in the power. And the same thing is every day. Okay, every day we don't wake up in the morning with a clean slate, but we wake up in the morning with a clean start. And God says, whatever you did yesterday needs to be addressed. Fine. Maybe some of that needs to be addressed on Yom Kippur. But it needs to be addressed, but for now, it's fresh. There was a great chassid, his name was Reb. I knew him, his name was Reb Avram Ayar. Came from Mercer. And he used to say that, you know, one of the worst things that we talk about in Jewish tradition and Jewish knowledge is Amalek. Amalek. So Amalek was a physical nation that attacked us, but also we have the idea of spiritual Amalek. Amalek is always considered like symbolically of the greatest evil. So he said, it's called Amalek in Ashkenazi pronunciation. So he used to say that when people start talking about Amol, you know, it used to be when I was younger, in the previous generation, you know, the greater people. When people get stuck in nostalgia, he used to say Amol, which in Yiddish means Amalek Tzayt, like it used to be. Amol is Amalek. That's what he used to say. Amol is Amalek. Like it's evil. Like getting stuck in the past. So therefore, that's the second reason why presence is so important in the Tshuva process. So it's almost like a double contradictory thing. On the one hand, to make a cheshbon needs awareness. To learn to think about the year gone by needs presence. I need to be a person that's aware. But more importantly, I need awareness. I need presence because I need to be in the now. You cannot do tshuva by being stuck in the yesterday or the tomorrow. The road, the journey towards this idea of tshuva, of reconnecting, of improvement and of growth means I learn to focus on the now. There's a third reason why presence is so important. That's what we're going to deal with next week, and that's about the presence, the deeper presence, which is going deeper into ourselves, but we'll talk about that next week. But you know, this thing needs practice. To become present needs practice. It actually needs time every single day. What today they call mindful meditation, but it is something we need every single day to actually spend time learning to notice, learning to be aware. So I said this term we're going to try something new. Well, not new, but we'll try a few minutes at the end of each session to practice together. Do a little meditation. If you're not into meditation, you can fall asleep. So I want everyone just to sit and relax. And just to slowly close your eyes. And when you're relaxed or when you're sort of able not to be distracted, just turn your attention to your breathing. Just breathe in and out and try and be aware of each breath in and each breath out. If your mind wanders, just slowly bring it back. We don't often notice our breathing, but try and notice the rhythm of how you breathe. In, out, in, out. In Hebrew, breath is neshima, same word as neshama. Each breath is an expression of your soul, your neshama, your purity. Your freshness. Now I want you to breathe in deeply, hold it there, and then slowly breathe out. And when you breathe out, feel that sensation of letting go. So breathe in, hold, 2, 3, slowly breathe out. In, 2, 3, slowly exhale. One more time, breathe in deeply, hold, 2, 3, slowly breathe out. Just try this for a few moments. When you exhale, try to feel that sensation of letting go. Getting rid of the toxicity, the bad of yesterday, the problems of tomorrow. When you notice your breathing, you notice your soul, but you can only hang on to your soul if you exhale the toxicity. Hold that thought, come back to where you are. And this is a very short and very powerful thing you can do any time of the day. So here's what I suggest. Anytime you feel fragmented, every time you start to go all over the place, you could be in a shopping center. Stop, notice your breathing. It's very interesting that breathing is one of the most fundamental foundations of life. And yet we never notice it unless we have a cold. Interesting thing. So, and it's also so deep because it expresses the neshama. So a good start to learn to become aware is to start to notice how we breathe and notice what it represents. So we'll do some more in the coming weeks and go deeper. But for now, that's a good introduction. I just want to remind everyone once again to book for the journey. You'll enjoy it. We'll do some really good meditations there as well. And have a wonderful week.